Insurance giant AIG sees its stock price collapse. Houston airports stagger back to their feet following Ike. And NASA hurries to clean up mission control in time for Atlantis. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, September 16th, 2008. All those mortgage defaults you've been reading about lately had mortgage insurance provided by some insurance company somewhere. Apparently, too many of them were insured by American International Group, Incorporated, better known as AIG. Now, the company may be looking to sell off assets to remain in operation, including International Lease Finance Corporation, its profitable aircraft leasing company. The last time ILFC was rumored to be for sale was in May, when AIG had just reported a $7.8 billion quarterly loss. Instead, ILFC management got more operating autonomy and the okay to base its incentive packages on the performance of ILFC alone and not AIG as a whole. Well, last month, AIG announced another staggering loss in the second quarter, this one over $5 billion. Last Thursday, AIG said it would persevere and announce a restructuring plan on September 25th. Investors panicked and drove the stock price down 31% in trading on Friday. Then, over the weekend, AIG rejected a low-ball takeover bid from a group of private equity firms. The stock plummeted another 61% yesterday. Now, the Wall Street Journal reports ILFC may be for sale again. In the short term, AIG has asked the Federal Reserve for a $40 billion bridge loan while it looks for new investors. The Fed is reportedly considering a loan. AIG has already taken $20 billion from new investors this year. An active U.S. hurricane season is worsening the company's plight. Insurance claims along the Gulf Coast are coming at a particularly unwelcome time. AIG also risks a downgrade in its credit rating. Until all this plays out, if you have your aircraft insured through AIG, fly it very carefully. Some airlines resumed limited service from Houston, Texas, yesterday, following the weekend passage of Hurricane Ike. Others say they'll need until at least Wednesday. Continental Airlines, which is based at George Bush Intercontinental Airport north of Houston, planned to operate the vast majority of its mainline schedule to and from that airport yesterday. Continental Express and Continental Connection planned a reduced schedule, due largely to damage sustained to Terminal B. Continental has flown in extra employees from other areas to assist in restoring service. A nighttime curfew now in effect throughout Houston exempts airline employees. At Houston Hobby, the harder hit of the city's two airports, Southwest Airlines was waiting till today to resume limited operations, pending repairs of water damage and broken glass. Southwest also suspended operations Saturday afternoon from Dallas Love Field, but resumed flights there by 5 p.m. local time on Saturday. Yesterday marked the first full day crews could assess the damage in the Houston-Galveston area following Hurricane Ike. NASA reports the Johnson Space Center, located southeast of the downtown area, about 10 miles inland from the shores of the Houston Shipping Channel, could be closed throughout this week and possibly into next for repairs of roof damage at Mission Control. NASA says a 65-member team rode out Hurricane Ike at Johnson and has begun to transition to recovery operations, cleaning up debris, restoring power and other facilities and infrastructure. The center oversees all shuttle launches and operations on board the International Space Station. The evacuation of the Johnson Space Center ahead of Ike last week delayed the scheduled docking of a Russian Progress resupply capsule. That docking is now tentatively scheduled for sometime tomorrow. For now, the ISS continues to be controlled from Austin, Texas, and Huntsville, Alabama, where NASA sent teams before the storm hit. NASA says it's too early to know if there will be any effect on the scheduled launches of Atlantis and Endeavour. Larry Gregory, president of the Lone Star Flight Museum in Galveston, tells ANN his staff members are all safe, but the museum itself suffered damage during Ike's passage. Quote, "Damage to the museum is substantial. The extent of the damage has yet to be assessed by officials and staff. As soon as possible, we will let you know about reorganization and reopening," unquote. Before Ike's arrival, pilots were able to relocate several vintage aircraft. Larry thanks friends and supporters for their thoughts and prayers. Up next on ANN, a controller says Sunday's 737 crash in Russia may have been pilot disorientation. The FAA covers an airport's legal costs in a NIMBY battle. And AOPA works to calm fears in North Las Vegas. You're listening to Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 16th. I'm Paul Plagg. Reports out of Russia point to a number of possible causes behind Sunday's loss of an Aeroflot Nord 737 in the Ural Mountains that claimed the lives of all 88 people on board. The Associated Press called attention to conflicting stories out of Russia, one suggesting an engine failure, the other hinting at human factors. Alexander Bastrykin, the chief of the Federal Investigative Committee, told reporters early yesterday the airliner's right engine may have failed, then caught fire, as the plane was on approach to land in Perm. But controller Irek Bikboff told state-run Channel 1 TV the pilot may have been disoriented. Quote, "I informed the pilot that he has reached a point where he should go down. He confirmed he was going down but kept climbing," unquote. Bikboff says he then ordered the plane to abort its approach and make a right climb out, but instead the plane banked left. The controller says he asked the pilot whether he had the situation under control, and the pilot responded in the positive but with evidence of stress in his voice. So far, there's been no official comment on a possible cause. Tweed New Haven Regional Airport in Connecticut is trying to move forward with a renovation which includes federally mandated runway safety zones. But the airport is $235,000 in debt, largely due to legal challenges to the airport's runway expansion by the adjacent town of East Haven. The Yale Daily News reports the FAA has now stepped in with a grant of $400,000 to cover 95% of the airport's legal costs associated with the dispute. Some in East Haven have pointed to the grant as evidence the FAA is putting expansion ahead of local concerns. Tweed New Haven Regional straddles the towns of New Haven and East Haven. The airport is owned by New Haven, but the mandated runway safety zones extend onto airport-owned land which lies within the boundaries of East Haven. The FAA grant doesn't end this dispute. In April, East Haven Mayor April Capone Allman submitted a cease and desist order to delay construction. The Yale Daily News reports Tweed officials responded with a federal lawsuit. A decision in that case is expected next month. The premise of the legal challenge to the airport's renovation is environmental. Tweed has been issued a permit for its project from Connecticut's Department of Environmental Protection. Tweed is an active general aviation field which is also served by 10 U.S. Airways Express flights each day, all going to Philadelphia. Its longest runway, oriented 220, is 5,600 feet long. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association and its Air Safety Foundation have moved to address the concerns of residents near North Las Vegas Airport in Nevada, where two fatal general aviation crashes in the span of a single week last month caused understandable jitters. On August 22nd, a Velocity Experimental crashed into a house near the airport, killing the pilot and two people on the ground. 6 days later, a Piper Navajo crashed into a yard, burning two homes. The pilot died, but those in the houses survived. Bruce Landsberg, executive director of the AOPA Air Safety Foundation, commented, quote, "Fatal general aviation accidents are very low, and it's rare that anyone on the ground is injured or killed when an aircraft crashes. A situation like this, in which two aircraft crashed into houses in the same area less than 1 week apart, is extremely rare. But we can't discount even rare incidents. That's why we reached out to pilots in the area with our safety materials," unquote. The foundation says it sent an email to nearly 3,000 pilots in the area, encouraging them to send a strong message to local authorities about their investment in aviation safety by completing online air safety courses. AOPA says it worked with North Las Vegas Airport Support Network volunteer Kathleen Snaper to mobilize local pilots and the surrounding community. The association provided resources and advice, while Snaper provided AOPA with critical information that resulted from multiple public meetings following the accidents. The effort would seem to have been an overwhelming success. Local media reported pilots outnumbered other area residents at the meetings by a wide margin. And unlike the knee-jerk reaction of Clark County Aviation Director Randy Walker, who proposed banning experimental aircraft from the facility, Snaper told AOPA that actual airport neighbors seemed more concerned with noise from low-flying aircraft. AOPA Airport Support Network Director Jennifer Storm expressed gratitude for Snaper's work. Quote, "Thanks to the keen insight from Kathleen, AOPA can address the specific topics of concern in the area, including noise complaints. That's why ASN volunteers are crucial to AOPA's effort to protect community airports. In emergency situations like these, they are able to quickly provide us with accurate information to help us work at the local level." Unquote. The Airbus A380 Super Jumbo has already faced two development delays totaling almost 2 years. Airbus made slight downward revisions in production numbers in May, but insists there will be no more delays, despite new rumors. Reuters reported finding a story in the Sunday edition of the French weekly Le Journal des Dimanches, claiming an unnamed source at Airbus was now saying deliveries would total between 8 and 10 this year. That would be even lower than the May revision, downward from 13 to 12. An Airbus spokesman told Reuters Monday there have been no changes to the A380 delivery schedule since May, when the Division of EADS announced it would deliver 12 of the planes this year and 21 next year. That's down from an earlier estimate of 25. Airbus is scheduled to deliver an A380 this Friday to Qantas in Australia, the first of 20 ordered by that airline. Airbus reports a total of 192 firm orders so far for the A380. Still ahead, the major U.S. airlines report a combined second quarter loss. Frontier joins the crowd and charges for your first checked bag. And United doubles its second bag fee. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation, the Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, September 16th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics says the six largest network airlines as a group reported an operating loss margin of 6.3% in the second quarter of 2008. Last year, the group reported a 9.2% profit margin for the second quarter. Network carrier Alaska Airlines and low-cost carrier Allegiant Airlines both requested confidentiality for their second quarter financial reports. The numbers are being withheld pending a decision on their motions. Airlines are generally granted such motions in cases where disclosure would give an unfair advantage to competitors. The portion of operating expenses allocated to fuel rose to 30.6% in the second quarter of this year. That's well over double the 12.8% of costs represented by fuel 5 years ago in the second quarter of 2003. Attempts by the airlines to create revenue by unbundling or adding surcharges for check bags, ticket changes, and even aisle seats or exit rows has been short of overwhelming. BTS reports the airlines collected a total of $182.6 million in excess baggage fees during the second quarter, up from $113 million in the second quarter of last year when most airlines still took your first bag free. The top three operating profits were reported by low-cost carrier Spirit Airlines and regional carriers Comair and Atlantic Southeast Airlines. Network carriers American Airlines and U.S. Airways and low-cost carrier Frontier reported the worst operating loss margins. Which may be why Frontier is now joining the trend towards charging for all checked bags. The Denver-based carrier says it'll begin charging a $15 fee for your first checked bag, joining the $25 second bag fee it launched back in July. Frontier is struggling to continue operations under bankruptcy protection. The new first bag fee is effective for travel on or after November 1st. Frontier's Early Returns Summit and Ascent members as well as active duty military personnel and AirTran Airways A-Plus Rewards elite members traveling on Frontier will not be charged for a first or second checked bag. Frontier entered Chapter 11 on April 10th. The airline accepted a $75 million commitment in post-petition debtor-in-possession financing from Perseus LLC to sustain operations in the short term, but also agreed to slash capacity by 17%, with a proportional cutback in its workforce. Now that United Airlines passengers are getting used to paying $25 to check a second bag on domestic flights, parent UAL Corp announced yesterday it's doubling that fee to $50 one way. The $15 fee for your first checked bag, begun by United in June, will continue unchanged. Reuters reports the fee will not apply to customers in the United First or United Business programs, those with Premier status with United or Star Alliance, or active-duty military personnel traveling on orders. United says the fee will affect only 1 out of 7 customers. In an odd bit of budgetary camouflage, United lumps revenue from checked bag fees in with merchandising. The airline says revenue for the entire category will reach $700 million next year. There's no report on the portion credited to checked bag fees. And finally, we thought the Pentagon's recent decision to cancel the competition to build the next U.S. Air Force tanker would end that debate for a while. It turns out all it's done is move that soap opera to a different channel. Instead of being debated among military watchers and Wall Street analysts, the fight has bubbled up now on the U.S. presidential campaign trail. Reuters reports Democrat Barack Obama said on Friday the decision to let the next administration resolve the KCX bidding mess was a good idea, but, quote, "While it was right for the Pentagon to cancel competition, it was wrong for John McCain to reward two of the Washington lobbyists who worked against Boeing with jobs on his campaign," unquote. Obama was in New York using a video conference to address the National Convention of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers in Florida. The IAM has opposed the Airbus-based tanker proposed by Northrop Grumman and Eads, saying it would send U.S. jobs overseas. Ironically, McCain, a senator from Arizona, thought things were too cozy between Boeing and the Air Force back in 2003, when the service announced plans to spend $23.5 billion to lease and buy 100 Boeing 767 tankers without competition. At that time, he called it a ripoff for taxpayers. The resulting scandal ended in prison sentences for Boeing's chief financial officer and a former Pentagon procurement official. Neither McCain nor his campaign staff have responded to the latest Obama attack. In attempting to paint McCain as a corrupt Washington insider, Obama has made much of the appointment of several former Eads lobbyists to work on McCain's campaign. Tom Leffler, the head of a lobbying firm called the Leffler Group, quit the campaign in May after it imposed new rules curbing the involvement of lobbyists. While it might be a little distressing to see an important political race brought down to a squabble worthy of afternoon TV dramas, we have to acknowledge one important step forward. For the first time in more than a week, Obama is actually attacking his opponent instead of a certain Alaska governor. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear Kit Darby of Aviation Information Resources provide details on what's expected to be a long-term industry shortage of new pilots. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.